This week, I have my first co-host joining me. I want to introduce Siobhan, who is a word witch helping founders weave magic through their copy. And I would say you haven't identified yourself as this, but I'm going to identify you for you. You're a fellow feminist killjoy.
Yes. 100%. Yes. I am that bitch.
So hello, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you. I'm really excited to be joining this because I loved your post last week when you did your Lazy Girl News. I really need to do something like this. When you put out for this, I was like, yeah!
Yeah. You're the perfect co-host. So, should we dive into our first bit of news then?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak called an emergency announcement outside his house on Friday night about the genocide in Gaza. Unrelated, he also hates irony. What do we say about this? It feels clear that the Tories are worried about their far-right seats going to Britain First.
Britain First, I think, is another one. Yeah.
So I think, is that a thing?
I think a lot of us got a little bit excited as well when there was an emergency thing, being like, oh my God, he's going to call an election. Is he going to call an election?
Yeah. Really?
And then the disappointment of him just basically detracting from the Tory party to like, there's extremists marching through London being anti-Semitic. And you're like, yeah. I'm not really sure that's what's actually happening. And who is actually feeling scared? Because I don't know any Jews who've marched in London who felt scared about what's been going on. So where is this information coming from and this conflating anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism? As someone who's been heavily involved in the Labour Party for the last like 8 years and then got kicked out 18 months ago and I've seen this weird the kind of fire around this thing that people get so het up with, and it's like they're not the same thing. They are not the same thing, and that's Rishi's speech is very much saying they are the same thing. Like, anti-Zionist, you are therefore anti-Jew, anti-Semitic. And that's not what it's all about. He's tried to portray everybody else as being extreme when actually the most extreme person in this situation is an unelected prime minister with like short man syndrome issues and because he's so short. It's just like a really weird, but you're putting in the most fascist policies we've seen in like decades.
Yeah. And I think it's really ironic to hear a prime minister who will not admit that Lee Anderson saying that Sadiq Khan is run by Islamists is Islamophobic when we all know that it is, then suggesting that pro-Palestine protests that are simply calling for the bare minimum, which is just a ceasefire. A ceasefire, which means both sides, right? A ceasefire is stop fighting. So to suggest that we are the extremists is... So do you think it's a distraction then? Do you think it's a distraction tactic for the... Because he also called out George Galloway in quite a punchy way.
So, yeah, we're going to talk about him a bit later, aren't we? But I think it was definitely a distraction technique. And I think very much from a point of pain for him, like, we lost this election.
Yeah.
They're so delusional. I don't think they saw that coming at all. Yeah. And the irony, he doesn't like irony, but the irony being that he's like, George Galloway did, it was one topic, he got elected on one topic. But I'm like, you literally won 2019. That's the only reason the Tories won, because they just went, let's get Brexit done.
Yeah, exactly.
Like having stood in the general election in 2019, I sat opposite the Attorney General, or sat next to the Attorney General at the time, Geoffrey Cox, who that was literally the line he just kept bashing out and then kept accusing me of being a one-line person talking about poverty in the UK. You're like, but yeah, so Rishi, I think it was a distraction technique to be like, to talk about, well, George didn't really win very well. It's just because we have extremists
Yeah.
All these extremists were campaigning for him. It's like, yeah, well, that's not really what happened, but yeah, okay. And yeah, with
the Lee Anderson thing,
he hasn't condemned Liz Truss for her blatant fascist behaviour, like being interviewed by Steve Bannon, going to these really far-right places where Nazis literally hang out. Mm. It's disgusting, the stuff that she's done. And then there was somebody else, wasn't there?
Suella.
Yes. Yeah,
she read the article, didn't she? And it was
And she used that bitterness. And that's literally racist. Mm. Like, it's just a horrific term. And none of them, they're very quick to call extremists racist. We're not extremists for calling for a ceasefire.
YouGov polls have suggested fairly consistently that the majority of the country want a ceasefire. The vast majority of the country, so like something like 70%+, wouldn't say that we are by nature a big lefty country, but 70% want a ceasefire, which, I mean, by its very nature says that unless all of us are extremists, 70% of the country are extremists, that is not an extremist view. It's not a marginalised view, is it? It's actually the popular view.
Yeah, I think that's what's really confused me, is this reframing of humanity as extremism. It's very peculiar, and they're projecting, aren't they? I guess this is exactly what the Israeli government are doing. Yeah. It's projecting onto us, like, what they're actually doing. So, you know, the fact that they're putting the heebie-jeebies up, they're, you know, putting the heebie-jeebies up us because we're paying more for our bills. We're scared, like middle class families are scared of losing their homes. Teachers, nurses, doctors panicking about paying their bills. We should all be able to pay our bills and live comfortably. But none of us seem to have spare time or cash, even though the gap is widening. It's just a strange place for him. They're just distracting. It's a divide and conquer tactic.
Yeah,
it is. Time and time again, isn't it? And it's just really frustrating. I know lots of us are feeling a lot of rage at the moment, and Friday just really exacerbated that. It's all so weirdly interlinked as well, and I don't think people are noticing the patterns of the repeated behaviours from the Tory party. This, like, it's gaslighting.
Yeah, completely. And with that, should we go on to the next news story, which we've talked about lately in news? Absolutely nobody, apart from the bookies and basically anyone, expected George Galloway won the Rochdale by-election. And I have to just say, if people that don't get the "would you like me to be the cat" reference, it will devastate me if you don't get that reference. Anyway, this makes him one of the very few pro-Palestine, anti-Zionist MPs who will no doubt be spicing up Parliament with requests such as, shall we stop sending bombs to kill children? And perhaps peaceful protests aren't the UK's biggest problem. Okay, we've talked about this, and he is a controversial figure for most of us who are old enough to remember him being expelled from the Labour Party in 2003. He was very outspoken about the Iraq War and that it was a mistake. So he was a Labour MP then. He had an argument with Tony Blair about that. And was expelled. He then went on to form the Respect Party, which was in opposition of the Iraq War. And his current party, and he was elected on that, his current party is the Workers' Party of Britain. So he has had three different parties, all with the same sort of theme. I think he's quite anti-establishment, and I would say he's incredibly left-wing. He's always been pro-Palestine, very, very staunchly anti-Zionist, but he is a controversial figure, and we can't get away from that. We can't gloss over it. So what do you think? As somebody who was part of the Labour Party,
I was heavily involved in the Labour Party from 2017 till very recently. I didn't actually ever experience him in the Labour Party, and I can see, like, he's very, like, he doesn't mince his words. He said it in one of his interviews over the weekend, or Friday, I can't remember when it was now. The last 3 days have been a bit of a blur. But, like, and Instagram's really annoying because he keeps showing you different stuff. He said the other day about Jeremy Corbyn being like, he'll turn the other cheek when you say stuff, but I'm not going to turn the other cheek. I will slap you right back. Mm. And, like, I was like, that is exactly what he's like the whole time. And even on Big Brother, you saw that, like, That dates us, doesn't it? That ages us a lot.
Yeah, it really does.
That reference, I was like, oh, that's a very old reference. Maybe we haven't got any very young people listening to this who won't remember. Is Big Brother still a thing? I have no idea. Because that's I only watched the first couple of seasons of that, so I don't actually know. But yeah,
let me just contextualise this for anybody listening so that they understand, so it's not an in-joke. So George Galloway was, after he was expelled from the Labour Party, he was on one of the very first seasons of Celebrity Big Brother when it was in its heyday. And there was a task where they had to role play. And him and Rula Lenska, who is... Actually, what does Rula Lenska do? She was an actress, wasn't she? They had to role play. I don't even know if they had to do this. He pretended to be a cat, and he was so disgusting and disturbing. He was crawling around the floor purring, and she really got into it too. They really went method with it. I think she was feeding him from her hand. I know, so Siobhan and I are
but at the time it was kind of very strange because no other parliamentarian, ex-parliamentarian ever had been part of this, and he's not kind of a big deal, but I think he was around the time that he was going to stand for London mayor as well.
Yes.
It was kind of part of his campaign to build up his popularity, I think, with a cynic's eye. But it was so super weird on that. You can just imagine his conversation with, in the back rooms of Parliament being what are we doing? Why are we doing this as a party? And you can imagine him and Dennis Skinner being what is going on? why are we doing... And Jeremy Corbyn, you can kind of imagine...
And Tony Benn.
And all these kind of lefty socialists being why are we doing this? You've literally made up evidence and a million people marched, yet you're doing what? Mm. To please America. You can just imagine the conversations and Tony Blair feeling probably quite intimidated by these stalwarts. And they are very much trade union chaps. So they're very used to having the floor and chatting, pontificating. Yeah. So much Jeremy, but the others.
Yeah.
I've met Jeremy a few times, and I've met Dennis Skinner a couple of times, but I haven't met the other, never got to meet Tony Benn. Oh. And one day I might meet George. But George has there's issues around his language about trans women. Mm. There's all that kind of stuff. So I don't want people to think we're massive fangirls of George by talking about this election. But it is kind of a big deal that he has won. And as he said, oh, balls, I've forgotten the phrase now. And I didn't.
He did say when asked about the Prime Minister, do you respect him? And he said, I despise him. He actually laughed and said, why are you expecting me to treat him like Moses? I despise him. And I would say the majority of the country despises him as well, which is, it's punchy language. It's really, and I think we're not used to seeing that. Well, I suppose we are used to seeing that because we're used to seeing the dog whistle vibes from the right, but from the left, we're used to seeing either Jeremy Corbyn, who very much is a turn the other cheek, and also I'm not playing dirty politics. I'm just not. Yeah. I don't get personal. He just doesn't do that.
He's such a nice man.
Yeah. I can't even... It makes me so sad to think that we threw that man away. And then Keir Starmer or Tony Blair, who are such career, ambitious, schmoozy, and David Cameron, who are centristy kind of, you know what I mean? Can't trust them politicians, but they will smooth everything over and also throw in a bit of Riz. Well, maybe not Keir Starmer, but
he's not show
he's no
vibes, is he? But Tony Blair very much was, with his education.
And also PMQs with Tony Blair were just a joy, the way that he's amazing. Or no, he wasn't amazing, he was terrible, but also from a showman point of view, that was his thing, and he did it really, really well. And I think also David Cameron, to a certain, he's probably a bit more like Keir Starmer.
Well, that's how they're trained as well, isn't it? They're both fancy colleges or whatever. And that's, you know, that's what they sit doing. And Keir Starmer went to my school. And I know that, like, obviously a very different age group. So wasn't there at the same time as me. Just want to clarify that for anybody who thinks I'm Keir Starmer. They're about 20 years before I was there.
Yeah.
Just to clarify. But that where we were taught to debate, that is what we spent a lot of our time doing. And obviously they toned it down when girls joined the school.
Of course.
But like, because God forbid we debate too. But like, that was a lot of our time was spent. There was a debating club and a modern United Nations club and like,
wow,
all this stuff. And they're like trained. They train you at private school to do this stuff. And they're on an assisted place before Tony Blair scrapped them. 1997 he scrapped them. I joined in 1996. Thank you very much, Tony Blair, my free private school place. But yeah, that's what private schools do, and that's what Eton does, and that's what, like, you know, all these other fancy schools do, Chapter House and wherever else. I'm really rubbish remembering names of things, thanks ADHD. But yeah, they are trained to stand and take, you know, to stand in front of a pulpit and deliver speeches and to you know, have catchy, punchy lines and stuff like that. And I don't think George is from that background. Like,
No. As
far as I know, I mean, I haven't done a massive stalk of him which I probably should have done, but I've been on calls all morning. But like, he comes from like a Scottish background. His background's in activism. So like, he was very much involved in the South African apartheid movement.
He was part of like underground movement with the ANC, yeah, wasn't he? And he, like, so he was like mates with Nelson Mandela. He was mates with Yasser Arafat. Like, he is, I can't overstate how influential and how hands-on he was. A bit like Jeremy Corbyn, these people walk the talk.
Yeah.
They really are. Obviously. They're not, they've got substance behind them. Like you say, we're not fangirling George Galloway, but I think it's, for anybody that doesn't know who he is, it's not just somebody who is speaking up to get a place. Yes. He really lives these values. He's not just a fair weather pro-Palestiner. He really is. Not that that would matter.
And there's a video that keeps coming up, and it's really funny because I remember seeing it at the time, back when we had dial-up, I think it probably was. But yeah, it was like this video of George Galloway, and it probably came out at the time, actually, when he was on Big Brother. So it must have been around in the mid-noughties. I can't remember when he was on. I'm trying to remember where I was in my school journey or uni journey. There's somewhere around there. But I don't know if you've seen that clip where he goes into Cambridge and he goes to debate.
When he refuses to debate, but yeah.
Elon Levy,
yeah,
who is a fucking big deal in the Israeli government at the moment. He's a spokesperson, PR, you know.
Prize twat.
Bullshit, yeah. Head honcho of bullshit. That
yeah,
is his,
yeah, yeah, 100%. Role.
But he basically had challenged George Galloway to this debate, and George got there and was like, "Sorry, who are you?" And he was like, "I'm an Israeli British citizen." And he went, "Sorry, I'm not debating an Israeli. Goodbye."
Yeah,
and walked out. And, you know, there was uproar and he was called out for being anti-Semitic because he wouldn't debate this chap. And at the time, Elon Levy was like a nobody. Like, nobody knew who he was. He was just a jumped up teenager, you know, in his posh suit. And everybody was like, oh, it's really rude that he walked out of the out of this debate. But actually, he was spot on. Like, why debate someone who's grown up with all this propaganda,
yeah,
and is just going to spout repeated lies?
Yeah.
Because he, but he knows.
He knew. Yeah.
So, I love the fact it's come out again. I know,
it's brilliant. So I think at the time, I probably would have thought the same. I probably would have been like, wow, that is punchy. You can't do that. That's right. And I am Arab. I have always grown up being pro-Palestine and understanding the Israeli government to a certain, you know, I knew what was going on. But I think even I would have been like, wow. That is, because that is not, nobody else was talking about that at that time. No. But now, yeah, we can look back and see, yeah, he was right.
Yeah, and that's the thing, his track record, it's like that clip of Norman Finkelstein, isn't it? Like,
yes,
where he's that girl with the crocodile tears.
Yeah.
They're kind of similar era, I think. And there were only a few people who were willing to put their, you know, for want of a better phrase, balls on the line.
Yeah.
can't think
money where their mouth is.
Yeah. Like, you know, Tony Benn was speaking up, Jeremy Corbyn was speaking up, George Galloway was speaking up. You had Jewish people like normal thinkers. No, I can't speak today. So I'm so sorry. We're recording a podcast and I can't speak. No. Like, they were just, you know, speaking up about stuff that no one else really wanted to speak about.
Yeah.
And of course, like, within the Labour Party, obviously he's getting kicked out because he spoke up about the Iraq war. Jeremy had loads of issues from within the party because of people like Margaret Hodge, Wes Streeting, who basically just point blank refused to campaign for him because we don't want you in our leadership position, and therefore we're going to keep wanging on about anti-Semitism. Don't get me wrong, there is definitely anti-Semitism within the Labour Party. There is in the Tory UK party. Society.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, we're all taught Shakespeare at school. We're all taught Dickens. Those are both anti-Semitic authors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the imagery we learn about Shylock and Fagin, like, those are characters that are, that's what we all think of.
Yeah.
Like, whether we want to or not. Like,
it's the stereotype of, like, a greedy, power-hungry Jew, isn't it?
Yeah, that exactly is that.
A really dangerous anti-Semitic trope. And I think at this point, I just really, really want to say that we're not saying these things to dismiss anti-Semitism, because, like Siobhan was saying, it's a problem in the whole party. And if you do feel uncomfortable, then I would really encourage you to look up the many amazing anti-Zionist Jews out there, because to conflate Zionism with Judaism is anti-Semitic in and of itself.
Exactly.
Because it if you understand anything about the Torah, it's forbidden to take a land that belongs to a people. There's a word in Hebrew or in Yiddish, and it translates as heerism, and heerism, and it's a really long tradition of Jewish people to embody heerism, which is to say that wherever we are, we will say, I am here, and stand with the people where we are, maintain our culture, our really strong, rich culture of Judaism, whilst also assimilating to the country that we live in. That is here-ness. And I just think it's so beautiful. And so that, I think, really explains how a theocratic ethno-state like Israel is not and should not ever be considered synonymous with Jewish culture, because it just isn't. So the very last bit of news, which actually is very spicy. So more than 100 people were killed and 700 more were injured after the IOF opened fire on civilians queuing for food aid in northern Gaza. If you don't remember, northern Gaza was the first place to be attacked by Israel after October 7th. So the infrastructure in northern Gaza is practically non-existent. They were asking people to go from the north to the south. So it wasn't a safe zone at all. So really, there's no infrastructure. There's been food aid has not been able to get there because of the lack of infrastructure and the fact that it's so dangerous. So the people that were wounded couldn't even get to hospitals in ambulances. They were going on the back of carts led by donkeys. So Israel have a few different stories as to what happened. They say the IOF didn't do it. This is the first thing that they said. They said they released a video which showed lots of people, kind of one of those heat map videos, lots of people rushing towards these trucks full of aid. And so they said that they stampeded and that's how they died. They were trampled to death because of looting and civil unrest, but which is not surprising given that they're starving to death.
Yeah.
Even if that was true, that's still Israel's fault because they starved them. But then when images of people emerged that clearly showed things like bullet wounds, people, eyewitnesses, were talking about what they'd seen, Israel then said the Gazan civilians tried to overpower the trucks, which caused the drivers to run people over to protect themselves. At the same time as a spokesperson was saying that, Ben-Gavir, who is the security minister, and a really, really nasty piece of work, said that the IOF were acting in self-defense, you know, against basically a baying mob of Gazans who tried to attack them. And he said that they did a really great job. So I don't know which of these three stories it is, but he also used that as the reason that we, you know, there can't be aid going to northern Gaza because look what happens. So, okay, I have a few different feelings about this. I mean, one is that they're using this because now that, you know, the EU have resumed funding to UNRWA, which is bad news for Israel because they literally said in a Security Council meeting, I think, or a UN meeting, UNRWA has to be, we have to get rid of UNRWA. So Ben-Gvir saying this made me think, oh, so that was their plan all along, obviously, but was it because they wanted to prove that aid going in is too dangerous and they hoped that we would stop funding again? Or is it to distract from the fact that Israeli settlers are now moving into places that they shouldn't be moving into and settling in both southern Gaza and northern Gaza? And this, if we're all looking over here at this story, which is horrific, we won't be looking at the other horrific things that they're doing. What do you think?
I think it's a combination of both. I think there's definitely distraction technique. I mean, all the lies around what happened is all to, like, the longer we take to figure out what happens, the more time we're spending on that and less time looking at the settlers who are, like, they stormed northern Gaza, mm-hmm. like, when this was happening, because they were, like, they're all distracted dealing with all of that. Mm. Let's go. And then, obviously, in, like, Khan Yunis Rafah area, you've got people having a festival, like, blocking aid getting in, mm-hmm. literally handing out cotton candy and sweets and playing music and having a great time starving the population in Rafah. Like, just really odd. And I don't know. I think there's been a purposeful starvation of the whole of Gaza for, well, since October the 8th. So they've definitely got an agenda of, like, this is demoralizing. It's another way of dehumanizing people.
Yeah.
The language used by all the spokespeople about the stampeding and all that mm-hmm. stuff, that's all really dehumanizing language, which again is like, it's kind of embedding that thought of, like, oh, these Gazans, they don't understand. They're just animals. They're just trying to get the food. Like, there are children dying in northern Gaza from eating poisoned animal feed. And there's, you know, how babies are dying because their parents are so starving they can't feed their babies. And then those babies are dying. It's just absolutely horrific. And anybody who's looking at it thinking, like, well, you know, if they just gave over the hostages, this wouldn't be happening. It's like, they could hand over the hostages and more. They could hand over thousands of pounds worth of money to Israel. And Israel couldn't give a flying fuck, frankly. Like, they are not interested in the hostages. There have been marches in Israel outside the government, outside the Knesset, how you say it. It's Knesset, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I just made this word up.
No.
But yeah, there's been marches outside. There's been marches outside Netanyahu's home.
Yeah.
You know, there's a huge presence of some of the hostages' families, of, like, people who really care about peace. They want there to be a democratic one-state solution. Like, but it's like the government are just, la, 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 we just want Gaza. And there's people, you know, soldiers having photos taken with their, like, shop banners that they're going to have put up. The massacre was horrendous, and the fact that they only killed 100-ish people is a miracle in a way, because it could have been a lot worse. Like, it felt very much to me like Tiananmen Square. That was the vibe. Like, I got goosebumps thinking about it. Just like these poor humans who have been starving to death, being like, "Oh my God, there's aid got in," and then being trapped. And just, I mean, when you're that hungry, like, you're that desperate. Yes, they may have been a mob.
Sure, of course they would have been. There will have been people that stampeded as well to get away from the bullet. You know, once they opened fire, there will have been people who trampled over other people to save themselves. So that is not, none of it is surprising. And also, even if, which we know it isn't true, but even if, let's just say, the Gazans, the Palestinians, civilians trying to get some food, trying to get aid, even if they went crazy and were, you know, trying to get onto the truck and, you know, hurt people in the process, that's still Israel's fault. That is exactly what you'd expect from anybody who has been starved to death, who has had their family starved to death. That's not uncivilized, that's survival.
Yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it? Like, they can't see any blame on their part. They're the victims in all of this. They haven't always been, they're not the perpetrator of this. It's all the Gazan spot. If they just handed over the things, or if they just tell us where Hamas are, like, they don't, like, they cannot see. They're completely delusional, and they tell themselves the lies over and over again, and it's like they've got to convince themselves before they convince everybody else. Like, they've repeated that lie so many times to themselves, like, this is nothing to do with us, you know, we've tried our best, look, we've let aid in, and this is what's happened. I mean, yeah. what do you want us to do now?
Yeah.
And then it feels like the airdropped USA aid, you know, 33,000 meals, well, that's going to go far. They've been starved for 4.5 months.
There's millions of people.
Well, we'll just share one packet of food that's out of date together, shall we? Oh, fantastic. You have a mouthful, I'll have a mouthful. Done. We're fine now. Thanks, Joe.
So that was some great lip service from Joe. And actually, before we end, I just want to quickly say, which is breaking news, I suppose, was that, did you see Kamala Harris calling for a ceasefire?
Yeah.
And how interesting.
Was it late, mate?
Well, do you think it's, I mean, in a way, it's a smart move from her, because if they get re-elected, I mean, she's more unpopular than he is, I think, but if they get re-elected, he's going to die and she'll be the president. So, or was it Joe Biden saying to her, look, I need to keep that sweet, sweet Israeli dollar, so I need my AIPAC funding, so you're going to go out there and call for a ceasefire, and by, what's the word, by proxy, I'll, you know, it's my government, it's my vice president, so therefore I have also called a ceasefire without actually calling for a ceasefire.
Yeah, but then, but what was weird was, like, he was licking his ice cream the other day, being
that was so chilling.
A ceasefire on Monday. Don't worry about it, guys. It's going to be a ceasefire on Monday. And then, like, nothing happened.
But that's why I think, because he had said, it's going to be by Monday, like, chill, whatever.
Yeah.
And they have said, we'll do 6 weeks, and that's what's on the table. Obviously, that's so embarrassing for Joe Biden. And also, that's not what they want. They want there to be a proper ceasefire so they can carry on, you know, keep their power, keep their money, carry on giving money to Israel, and then we'll all forget about it. I guess that's what they think. So that's why I think he was like, fuck, well, what do we do? Well, I'll send you out.
Yeah, go on, Harris. Take it for the team.
Exactly.
I'll give you some of my AIPAC funding.
Yeah, exactly. I'll take you out for tea.
Yeah, well, the thing is, because Kamala's partner is Jewish as well, like, and a massive Zionist, there's obviously, like, issues there. Like, Joe's obviously got that really long history of being funded by
them. He's a Zionist, like, and has been since his early days.
Which is really weird, because he loves his Irish roots. We're all like, Irish people, like, you can fuck right off now, Joe.
We do not claim you.
Nobody wants you here. Like, that is, you're done. You are dead to us. But yeah, I think you're right. I think she's almost been like, she's not a scapegoat, but I think, I also wonder whether there's an element of her team being like, we are quitting if you don't call for a ceasefire.
Let's distance ourselves from Joe.
Because don't forget, they're very left-leaning. Like, there are a lot of lefties who campaign to get this woman of colour into a role of power. Like, they worked their socks off to make sure that she won that. And at the time, I remember being so excited about her getting in. You know, and the same with AOC and all these other people who haven't really made a bit of difference. But, like, you can imagine her team just being like, oh my God, just call for a ceasefire. Like, we get it, you're funding, but like people are dying. Then her being like, no, not till Joe says I can. Like,
Because she does seem quite weak.
Yeah, that's the thing. I do feel it's a bit pathetic. And yeah, it's too little too late, but you know, fingers crossed they can hold some sway with Satan Yahu and his pals. There was a resignation in the Israeli government as well this morning. But yeah, and I can't remember. Oh, it was somebody from the IOF. There was a big deal resignation, but stupidly didn't save the thing on my phone, so now can't find it, obviously. Yeah, but it's kind of, yeah, there's so much going on at the moment, and it's really hard for people to keep up. And I think this is a brilliant way of diluting it a little bit and making it easier for people to understand. So well done, Lucy, for doing this. I think it's a great idea.
Oh, thanks. That was such a lovely little wrap up as well. Nice. Nice little segue. Well done. So that's all from us this week. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate, only give me 5-star ratings, review and or share with a mate if you think that they'll like it too. And if you do share, please feel free to tag Siobhan. She is at This Sister Scribes, or me at Lucy Lucroft, or both of us on Instagram. So that's it from us. See you next week.